Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
So earlier in the show, I mentioned Ben Standing's latest column, which includes a lot of information about the market for Daron Payne and other defensive tackles when this season is over. And a lot of expectation among NFL executives and agents is that the market's going to really skyrocket, that the importance of the position and the number of players out there and the competition for some of those players will certainly benefit a guy like Daron Payne. And some people think the price tag will go to $21 million a year or north of that. The franchise tag will be 18 in 2023. But there was one quote that I didn't read that I wanted to read real quickly, and that came from former NFL GM Mike Tannenbaum, who said, quote, "They each," talking about Allen and Payne, "allow the other to thrive because they'll see a lot of one-on-ones if they're both there. If I had Allen and Payne under contract, I would probably extend Sweat or Young, but not both, and then maybe draft a quarterback." The issue there is they don't have Payne under contract. And so if you're selecting between Payne, Sweat, and Young, and you say you've got to keep two of the three and you can only keep two of the three, what do you do? The key will be the quarterback contract next year, you know, because you're going to be looking to extend Sweat in the offseason. So the key will be, you know, is Wentz going to be back at $26.2 million next year? I don't think he's going to be. You know, if you end up with Taylor Heinicke on a modest extension, because remember, he's a free agent, and you draft a quarterback, you know, you take a big swing early in the draft on a quarterback, then you don't have a lot invested in that position, and now you've got the opportunity to perhaps keep, you know, all of them. You don't have to worry about Young in the upcoming offseason in terms of an extension. You will have to worry about picking up the fifth-year option. All right. Nick Ackridge is a data analyst for Pro Football Focus. Nick does a lot of the evaluations of Washington, in part because he's based here, and he's a big Washington fan. So the conversations with Nick over the last year or so have been interesting to me because he's really following this team, even if he's not asked by PFF to evaluate this team. So we hadn't caught up with Nick in a while, so I asked him yesterday on my podcast, and I wanted to play some of this back for you, if he thinks right now Washington's a legit good football team.
Yeah, the defense is one of the best in the league. I don't think you'll have many people arguing that. I think it's pretty clear what they've done over the past couple weeks, just, you know, completely shut down teams at times. The offense is not great, as we've seen. I mean, it's really tough when you have a quarterback like Heinicke who is limited. I mean, as fun as he is to watch at times, he is limited in what he can do. But, you know, the running game has come to life, and that's just how they're going to have to win games. It's going to be by scoring, you know, 14, 17 points and, you know, relying on that defense.
All right, let's focus on the defense to start. Going back to Sunday, Logan Paulson was on my podcast Saturday morning, and he said, "I think Atlanta's going to be the one team that might be able to run the football against this bunch. They've got an outstanding offensive line. They've got a great run scheme. They've got a dual threat quarterback, et cetera, et cetera." And we know what's, you know, kind of coming up here are a lot of run-first teams, the Giants, the 49ers, the Browns, and even the Cowboys now, with Kellen Moore calling the games the way he's begun to call these games with Dak at quarterback. What happened Sunday, in your opinion, in terms of why they got run on to the tune of nearly 6 yards per carry?
Yeah, it's the dual threat of Mariota, and it's kind of weird to see, because you saw them shut down an Eagles team who has a similar sort of rushing attack that they use their quarterback a lot, but the linebackers were really struggling. They were just struggling to, you know, kind of maintain gap responsibility, stay in their gaps. A lot of times you saw Davis and Bostic just kind of, you know, forcing themselves out of the gap, making it easier for the offensive line for the Falcons. And they do have a really good offensive line. Chris Lindstrom, their right guard, is one of PFF's highest graded offensive linemen, specifically for run blocking. So, you know, it was always going to be a tough task, and they kind of killed them on those read options. But in the second half, it was much better. I'd have to see what kind of adjustments they made, but it was a little bit rough at times in that first half. And, you know, the Giants could pose a similar threat. I mean, we've seen it in the past with Daniel Jones turning into Michael Vick at times, the way he can run that read option against just Washington. It seems like it's the only team he really is good against. But, I think it's going to be a similar sort of game where you're just going to see two teams just run the ball like crazy at each other.
Yeah, the Giants, you know, they were missing some pieces against the Cowboys on Thanksgiving Day along their offensive line. And we'll see how the week shakes out if they get some of those pieces back. But they were not healthy for that game on Thanksgiving Day. But back to Sunday. Defensively, who were the highest graded players?
Defensively, it was Kendall Fuller.
Yep.
At the top, Jonathan Allen, and then Cameron Curl with Montez Sweat closely behind him. It was a lower sort of grade. Fuller had the highest with a 79.5. I mean, which kind of matches what we saw. They were getting run on pretty easily in that first half. But, you know, Fuller's been great these past couple weeks. Like, he's completely flipped the switch. Jonathan Allen was good. He was getting, you know, pushed around in the run game a little bit. Not the typical pass rush game we've seen from Allen, but overall pretty good response in that second half that they had.
You know what's funny is every single time I have you on, like, Sunday was different. Don't get me wrong. And I know Duran's had some high grades. But it seems like, for whatever reason, and I think you explained this, you know, on one of the discussions we had, you know, that John and Duran are playing such high snap counts that, you know, mm-hmm. you end up getting some plays in there that can bring down the grade. But, you know, Payne had a couple of key pressures, literally almost got to Mariota on that final drive if he just reached his arm out a little bit further with Mariota going down, and then had the deflection on the final play. I think you feel the same way, and that is Duran's been a dominant player, and yet sometimes the grades don't necessarily reflect that. Why?
Yeah, I've talked about it a bunch, and it's something that's kind of tough for us to, you know, grade. Is he's a guy that is just going to eat double teams, and he's really good at it. And for us, if you're successfully just kind of containing a double team, it's just a zero grade for us. And you can make the argument that we should kind of positively grade that. I've done that in the past. But I think it's just the type of position he plays and, you know, eating those double teams. And you see it a lot with other people's grades, like when, you know, Jamin Davis has a high grade or Cole Holcomb has a high grade, it's because they can hit those gaps cleanly because someone like Payne is taking up a lot of space. Other times he is beating his man, but he's just not finishing the play. There's a lot of times that we have him graded highly for a quick win, you know, in the run game, but he's just not making the tackle in the backfield. So it gets downgraded just a little bit, but it will still be like a net positive for us. So that's kind of another reason, but yeah, I just think it's tough for, you know, his play style to really be graded highly in our system. I think, you know, you see it a lot, and the coaches keep talking about how well he's played. His teammates keep talking about it. So it's tough for us to kind of, you know, give him a higher grade just with the way we consistently grade things. But yeah, he's been pretty dominant.
Specific to this team, because you do end up grading this team, you know, I don't know. How often do you get the responsibility of grading the team that you care about the most?
If it's a 1 o'clock game, I'm usually grading one of the offenses / defenses. So the past couple weeks, I had the Falcons offense against Washington defense. So
okay, do you hear? Washington is a PFF client. I think all 32 teams now are PFF clients. Do you hear back? Do you guys hear back from Washington on grades? And if so, just give us kind of a sense. Not, you know, I don't want you to disclose anything that's proprietary, but what is typically the feedback you get from them?
I haven't got anything specifically. I just kind of, I'm on the data side. So anything we hear back from clients, that's not what I'm involved in.
Right.
You know, there might be, I mean, there's been times in the past where we've had players be like, hey, that's not my responsibility. And we fixed it because obviously our biggest critic is we don't know the play call.
Right.
We don't, but we're trying to get it as close as we possibly can. So there's a couple weeks ago, Sauce Gardner, the Jets corner, goes, he tweeted at PFF. He said, this was not my touchdown. He charged me for a touchdown. So we went back, we fixed it. So there's stuff like that. I mean, we're obviously not going to get everything right. It's just not possible. But as for, you know, Washington players saying anything, I don't
okay.
I don't know. We've dealt with obviously them for past couple of years now. I think they were the last team to sign up for us like 4 or 5 years ago.
How did Christian Holmes do for Benjamin St. Juice Sunday?
It was decent. 55.7, which is a little below average, right. But you know, for a seventh round rookie, that's pretty good. You know, the passing game wasn't massive for the Falcons. It wasn't something that they're really gonna, you know, rely on. Obviously it's the run game, so he kind of struggled a little at times to kind of, you know, help up and run support, missed a couple tackles. But overall, it was decent. I mean, it's kind of what you can expect from a seventh-round rookie corner.
Who was the highest-graded player on offense?
On offense, that was Brian Robinson.
Brian Robinson.
Was pretty obvious from what you saw. I mean, just missing tackles, and that's usually when you get a higher grade for us is you're forcing missed tackles, you're taking more than what the offensive line is giving you, and that's what he did.
I thought, personally, it was one of the best days for the offensive line. Obviously, they've struggled in pass pro much of the year. But even, and I think we talked after the Philadelphia game, and maybe we didn't, and maybe I'm thinking about somebody else. But, you know, the yards that Robinson and Gibson had against the Eagles on Monday night were a lot of, you know, their yards. There wasn't a lot of room to run. I thought Sunday, for the first time in a while, the run blocking, which has been okay, was outstanding. How did you guys see it?
Yeah, we have Cornelius Lucas was the second highest player on the offense. He has 76.8 run blocks. So he was very good there, and his now limited snap count with him and Cosme kind of rotating. But you know, it was decent. It was better than what they've done in the past. Still lower-ish grades on our side, just kind of right around average to a little below average. But, yeah, it's kind of been what you've said in the past. I think it's always been more of running backs taking a little bit more than what they've given. And we're not seeing these huge chunk rushes, which that's what you would typically see if, you know, an offensive line is kind of dominating. We've seen these kind of 4, 5, 6 yard gains, which has led to these long drives and these low-scoring games. So, I think the offensive line was definitely better last week than they have been in the past, but still need to see a little bit of improvement from that interior.
Yeah, I think we talked about the fact that, you know, maybe a couple of weeks ago, Lucas has been pretty good on the run, but has struggled in pass protection. And I think we're seeing now Cosme end up with more of those snaps. I mean, it was his job to begin with, but now I think last Sunday was the first Sunday we've seen Cosme in there more than Lucas was. So, Taylor Heinicke. How did he play Sunday?
Not great. It was one of his typical kind of Heinicke games where he made some decent throws, some solid throws where, you know, converted some key third downs, but just a couple throws that just makes absolutely zero sense of what he's looking at and what he's, you know, trying to accomplish. The interception, I've watched it about 4 or 5 times now, and I don't know what he thought was happening,
right.
Unless he just never saw the linebacker or something. But yeah, it was a, you know, your typical Taylor Heinicke game. He did, you know, like I said, converted some key plays and just kind of, you know, managed the offense. I know a lot of people don't want to hear game manager, but he did. He just managed it to enough of a point to get us, you know, enough points to win. And I think that's what you're just going to have to live with these next couple weeks, is it's not going to be pretty from him at all, but you just need him to limit the mistakes.
Where is he? And maybe you don't have this handy, but I know a couple of weeks ago, and I think it was with you, that, you know, after three or four starts, even with the excitement of the end of the Indianapolis game and the throw he made at the end of the Green Bay game to Terry on 3rd and 9, he was still, you know, pretty much, you know, in the bottom two or three quarterbacks in a lot of the PFF categories. Is he still there?
Yeah, he's still there for us. It's just the turnover-worthy plays that we chart. He has the highest percentage right now in the NFL of turnover-worthy plays. And right now he's getting lucky, and that's not a bad thing to be at with a team kind of, you know, in the position of Washington. He needs to limit those mistakes, and he got paid for it this past week. There's been just times in these past couple weeks where he's just completely misreading things, and he's doing his classic Taylor Heinicke balls where he's throwing it in quadruple or triple coverage and whatnot. But yeah, he's lower on our list, and it's just because of the turnover worthy plays, and it's why it doesn't really match up with some of those box score stats and EPA stats, stuff like that, because, you know, the defense isn't capitalizing on those interceptions that he's almost giving them.
So. All right. So you're a fan of the team. They've won 6 out of their last 7, 5 out of their last 6 with Taylor Heinicke at quarterback. We know what we saw from Carson Wentz before he got hurt in the Bears game. What would you be thinking about? Would you consider, or let me rephrase, would you be upset if Ron Rivera and Scott Turner turned back to Wentz?
Right now, I think I would. It's such a tricky situation because I don't think Heinicke is playing well. I mean, we've seen games where he has played really well. Obviously, the very first game against the Bucs in the playoffs. But we've seen games where he can be a pretty good quarterback. It hasn't been that way in the past couple of weeks. Like I said, he has been getting lucky. I think that they have a short leash on him now. But I think without any sort of, like, notice, I think it would be pretty harsh to just kind of pull him because, you know, they're winning and he's doing what he needs to do. I wish they would, you know, involve him more in the run game. I think he's a pretty good athlete and they could kind of use that to his advantage. But right now it just seems to, you know, just let him throw it maybe 15, 20 times at most in a game and just hope that run game wins you it.
You know what's interesting, Nick, is, and Doc just said this because I just had Doc on the podcast. You know, there have been some read option plays. Going back to last year, I remember specifically in some of the short yardage stuff against the Falcons last year, and he doesn't look like he wants to be aggressive. And I don't know if he doesn't read, whether it's the outside linebacker in a 3-4 or the D-end in a 4-3, if he doesn't read it well or if he's not comfortable. But I agree with you. Athletically, the stuff we saw from Mariota, now Mariota really looked, I thought, fresh, and I thought his speed and his quickness and his decision-making and his ball handling were excellent. But for whatever reason, and Scott Jackson, who I work with and have worked with for years, said, you know, as an Old Dominion guy, and Scott went to Old Dominion and called a lot of Taylor's games, he said they just never had that. There's a lot of RPO, but there wasn't a lot of read option with him. And so even in college, you know, the yards he got rushing were more off schedule. Maybe it's something he's just not good at or comfortable with.
Yeah, and that's a fair point. I think that would make the most sense as to why we don't see it very often. There's been plays. I mean, I think Scott Turner is extremely creative in the way he sets up run plays.
Me
too. Some of the run plays he has. I remember a couple games ago, they basically put on a triple option play. They had an unbalanced line where you had John Bates as the right tackle and Lucas over as the tight end on the left. And they essentially ran a triple option with Heinicke, Gibson, and Curtis Samuel motioning around. And I think if you can keep getting creative like that, I think it just opens it up more because, like I said, it's not like they're really gashing teams. It's these constant just 5, 6, 7 yard runs that you're just constantly putting together long drives. And you have to be almost perfect on offense. You can't have penalties. You can't have, you know, mistakes like that. So maybe if they open it up a little bit more, get a little more creative with Heinicke, I think it could lead to some bigger games and just kind of make it overall a little bit easier for everyone involved.
I think it does a lot of things. I remember Mike Shanahan very clearly telling me, he said, look, first of all, when you play 11 on 11 in the run game, it's a massive advantage. You know, when your quarterback is legitimately a potential runner, you're 11 on 11, and usually you're 10 on 11 when the running back, when the quarterback turns and hands it to the running back. He said that's one of the reasons we ran the football so well in 2012, because Robert was a run threat on every single, you know, snap, unless he was really under center. And then he said, you know, a lot of the read option presentation ended up being their best play action, which, you know, it just put the defense in conflict. Is he, you know, sticking it in Alfred Morris's gut? Is he going to keep it on a run? And then all of a sudden, using it as play action really worked as well. And you see that Taylor and Scott Turner, they use it as play action, but if he's not really a run threat, it's hard for that to really be something that ends up putting the defense in conflict. I think that's kind of what they might be missing from this offense, but there must be reasons. And I agree with you. I think Scott Turner's gotten really creative. Did you catch, by the way, Sunday? And I don't know if it was the first time. It's the first time I remember seeing it. They had on a given play, they had Curtis Samuel come in motion in sort of jet sweep fashion. And then right behind him came McLaurin on a jet sweep. You literally had two jet sweep action, you know, dual jet sweep action in the backfield going, and McLaurin got the ball on the second guy coming in that jet sweep motion, and he ended up with like a 5 or 6 yard gain, but I don't think I've seen that before.
Yeah, I love those sort of run plays. It's what you see the 49ers and that Shanahan offense do, is just constantly just send guys in motion, almost for no reason, just send them in motion, make the defense move, make them question what gap they're supposed to be in. And Washington has the playmakers to do it. I love what they can do with Curtis Samuel. Now you see them line him up in the backfield. You see him and Gibson line up in the backfield together and just create, like you said, create conflict for the defense, make them constantly question things. And if you can get Terry some easy touches, we all know how good he is with the ball in his hands. I think you can really hopefully just get more splash plays. And it's just what you need from this offense, because the constant just 15 play drive, it's just, it's tough to consistently win like that, because, like I said, you have to be perfect and you can't afford any sort of mistakes.
But you would agree with this, I think. It is the right formula for them, given what they have.
Yes, 100%. Because you can't drop back and try to throw it 50 times with Heinicke. You just can't do it. And, I mean, as frustrating as it is for someone who works for PFF, an analytics company, who's constantly talking about, you know, running isn't as productive as throwing the ball, but you know, this is what you have to do, and you see it a lot with all of these teams. With the quarterback play has not been great this year, so you see a lot of teams that have to run the ball. They can't, you know, consistently just go first down incompletion, second down incompletion, third down incompletion, and now you're off the field with not even a minute taken off the clock. So teams have to do this. It might not be pretty, but I think it's why you kind of see a lot of teams jumbled up in that middle there, just like Washington is.
Yeah, and I think, you know, when you said earlier you wonder about the length of leash and maybe it's short, I think you did say it was short on Taylor.
Yeah.
I just wonder if, like, Scott and Scott in particular is saying, look, we're a different team right now. You know, the offensive line's improved. We're a much better defensive team than we were early in the season. Brian Robinson Jr. has become a significant part of the offense. We didn't have him. We can continue with this formula with Carson Wentz, and then on top of that have the ability to throw the football, especially if we get down, because I think they're in big trouble if they get down two scores. And I know they were down two scores to Indianapolis. Okay, I understand that. And, you know, they're kind of living off what was a 50-50 ball, which I didn't have a problem with him taking to Terry McLaurin in that spot, given where, you know, the yard line they were on, the clock where it was, and needing a touchdown. But if they stuck with the current formula and put Wentz in there with, right now, and I'm not a Wentz guy, let me be clear on that, but with a better situation on defense, with Brian Robinson Jr., with a more consistent offensive line situation, couldn't you make the case that they might have more upside?
You definitely could. I mean, you see it all the time now. People are starting to make that case, to people that just don't believe in Heinicke. You can absolutely make the case, because Wentz is the better passer. He just is. I mean, like you said, you're not a Wentz guy. I was never really a Wentz guy. I think he's just way too inconsistent with his decision-making and the way he manages pockets and how he, you know, manipulates the pocket and stuff like that. But there is more upside in the passing game, and you will need that at times, because, like you said, you're going to go down at some point. And, you know, the Colts game is a bit of an outlier, because that offense was just as bad as ours. I mean, when you have Ellinger as your quarterback, you're not really concerned with them constantly putting up points.
Right.
But I think it's going to be interesting if this team goes down and, you know, Heinicke is making some poor decisions and he gets, you know, actually punished for it, and, you know, the defense is capitalizing on those. I think you could see it. I don't know how much it would change, just because I don't know how comfortable Wentz is right now. I mean, we saw him these first couple of weeks, and he just didn't look comfortable in the offense, was very skittish in the pocket, and that kind of made the offensive line look a little bit worse than I thought they were playing. A lot of times, I personally got yelled at for some Sam Cosmi grades, because we had him with some pretty decent grades in pass blocking and stuff, but people just see him, you know, the guy he's blocking getting the sack. But a lot of times it's because Carson was kind of, you know, just staying in the pocket too long, drifting in the pocket, you know, losing, basically the way he drifts in the pocket is you're losing leverage for the blockers. So it's kind of tough for them. I obviously, with more time, and he's been able to hopefully get more comfortable in the offense, I think you could see some upside, but I think it's a risk if you go to him.
Last question for you. Who do you really like in the NFC? Like right now, I mean, I think Washington would have a chance against a lot of these teams. Do you disagree or not?
I don't disagree at all, because they're the type of team that's going to, you know, just muddy the game up. And it's very similar to the way the Titans play. I mean, you see the Titans constantly kind of find themselves in the playoffs, and it's just going to be a low-scoring, kind of crappy game to watch. But I think they do have a really good shot against some of the teams. We saw them go toe-to-toe with the Vikings. We saw them go toe-to-toe with the Eagles. I think if they can sneak in, I think they have a real shot against any team that's out there right now. I think maybe the 49ers might be pushing to be the best team in the NFC. But yeah, it's going to be interesting for sure.
All right. Great job, as always. Really enjoy these conversations. Follow Nick on Twitter at PFF _ Nick Akridge. It's AKRIDGE. He's a data analyst for Pro Football Focus, and he's a huge DC sports fan. We'll talk again soon. Appreciate this, as always.
Awesome. Yep. Thanks for having me, man.
Nick Akridge, everybody. There was more NFL talk with him if you want to listen to it on my podcast. Coming up next, we'll follow up on some of that Carson Wentz, Taylor Heinicke talk. I mean, if you can't handle it, you can tune out and tune back in about 15 minutes. Also, how many wins will it take for Washington to nail down a wild card berth? I've gone deep into playoff scenarios. I'll get to that by the end of this hour as well. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, theteam980.com. We're free and live on the Odyssey app.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.